This is an ABC podcast.
Frogs have been around for tens and tens of millions of years, and the fact that we're seeing species disappear now at a rate that hasn't occurred in 100 million years in the environment, we know that we have a serious problem.
Frogs were already threatened before the devastating black summer bushfires. We meet those working on Australia's largest ever frog conservation program. And taking opera to the outback, students at Cobar High School find their singing voice.
Being a teenager in Cobar is kind of hard, kind of easy. It has its ups and downs, but we can express who we are through either music or writing, even this opera. We can express ourselves.
I'm Alex Hyman and this is Australia Wide. Firstly tonight, the Immigration Minister, Alex Hawke, has confirmed a family of Tamil asylum seekers will be allowed to live in community detention in Perth, but no decision has been made on their long-term future. The Bilawila family, as they've come to be known, but more accurately, the Muruhuppan family, will live close to the Perth Children's Hospital, while youngest daughter, Tharnika, is treated for sepsis and as they pursue ongoing legal matters. Here's Immigration Minister, Alex Hawke, earlier today.
So today I've made a determination that they will live at an address in Perth in the community with access to support and services. That is based on advice we have received from the health agencies in WA about the treatment that is ongoing there. That is the right decision, a compassionate decision for the family so they can be together while their remaining matters are resolved. It does not allow them currently to go to Bilawila.
The Muruhuppan family were removed from their home in Bilawila in 2018 after their visa expired and have been in immigration detention on Christmas Island since 2019. As we heard from Immigration Minister Alex Hawke, the family won't be heading to Bilawila. And friend of the family and campaigner Angela Fredericks spoke to Tobias Jurse Lewis about how they'll continue to lobby to bring the family home.
Look, I never let myself believe the hope that the government ever puts out there until I hear it. So for me this morning, it was, it was a huge letdown to basically just hear that ultimately nothing's changing. Yes, they're bringing the family together while their child is undergoing treatment. They're still remaining in detention. That is community detention. It is still detention ultimately. So all feeling a bit devastated at the fact we're not welcoming the news that they're coming home. I've said all along I'm not resting until their feet are on the soil here in Bilawila. So I keep my promises. The overwhelming support that has come out this week from, from members of the coalition, from other walks of politics, from organisations, we've seen from so many medical boards and, World Vision, so many different places supporting this family and a peaceful resolution. So that has massively just lifted both mine, the town's, but also Priya and Indeza's spirits this week. So I did speak to Priya after we received the news this morning. Priya is very happy that Nadez and Kopika are coming over to them. She's been telling Tharnika for, a week now, you are going to see your papa again, you're going to see papa. So to actually be able to see that happen is really fantastic for them. She's also seeing it as a positive step that they're being released into community detention, and she reiterates that all she wants is a peaceful existence here in Bilawila. She just wants to be able to raise her family, for Nadez to work, and for them to give back to the country that they're actually so grateful for.
That's Angela Fredericks there speaking about how the Bilawila community will fight to bring the Muruhuppan family home. Nadez and Kopika have now left Christmas Island on a chartered plane to Perth to reunite with their family.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
And you're with me, Alex Hyman. Great to have your company. A Sanctuary Point-based doctor on the New South Wales south coast is on the brink of closing her practice due to a critical GP shortage, and she is not alone. Around rural and regional Australia, medical practices in what are called non-priority distribution areas are struggling to recruit doctors. These are areas that are unable to employ overseas trained doctors. It's leading to a chronic shortage of GPs in these areas and even the closure of medical practices. Experts agree it's a complex problem. Jessica Clifford has this report.
In the small coastal village of Sanctuary Point on the New South Wales south coast, the town's only medical centre is set to close. The practice owner, Dr. Kate Manderson, says her older cohort of doctors are now retiring, but there's no one available to replace them.
We can't replace them, and that's because the Medicare, the Department of Health, has really tight rules about who's allowed to work as a GP in this country. And they think that we've got enough GPs in the Shoalhaven because there's lots of Medicare billings that go on. And that means we must have lots of GPs, therefore we mustn't have any more. And we just have to use the ones that we've got. So I can't replace the older doctors, which means we have no choice but to close the clinic. You can't have a general practice if you don't have any doctors.
Dr. Manderson's practice is not in a priority distribution area, which means she's not eligible to employ overseas trained doctors who would be willing to move to town. And while there's plenty of Australians graduating with medical degrees, most are choosing to specialise in higher paid fields or work in hospitals and cities. Darren Compton is a GP recruitment expert at DXC Medical Recruitment and says while there are government programs and incentives to encourage Australian doctors to go rural, it's not enough.
There are retention payments for rural doctors, which can help, but to be quite frank, it's a drop in the ocean compared to what a GP can earn when they're sort of counterbalancing that against other aspects like spouse's job and schools. Retention is a challenge, but recruitment is the real problem.
The Federal Minister for Regional Health, Mark Coulton, has defended the government's strategies when it comes to regional health. In a statement, he said while he recognises more doctors are needed, the government does see this as a key priority. The statement said work is currently underway to develop a national medical workforce strategy in conjunction with key stakeholders to guide long-term collaborative medical workforce planning across Australia. The Australian Medical Association's Council of Rural Doctors Chair, Marco Giuseppin, says as part of this, the AMA would like to see a program where GPs are employed by the government to work in regional areas.
Actually having a program where people can go out into a regional area, have a positive experience as a GP, has actually been shown quite objectively to have a benefit in terms of these people coming back to those communities, working in those communities, and then staying in those communities as a GP. And this is something that we've been pushing the government for a long time. They're starting to listen. And, you know, I'm hopeful that we can make some progress on that for these communities.
Until then, though, the healthcare situation in small towns like Sanctuary Point in the Shoalhaven will remain at crisis point.
This is playing out across rural Australia. Every small town will tell you the same story that I'm telling you now. It is an absolute primary care crisis because general practice manipulated and underfunded and downplayed by the federal government for 20 years, more, as long as I've been a GP, so over 20 years.
Kate Manderson ending that report from Jessica Clifford. Details are expected to be revealed tonight regarding a new free trade deal which the British and Australian Prime Ministers appear to have agreed to in principle. Narada produces tea on the Atherton Tableland, inland of Cairns in far north Queensland, and as Australia's largest tea grower, they are keen to take advantage of an FTA with the UK. The company has been selling tea for the past 50 years, but Chairman John Russell thinks it's time to tap into one of the world's biggest tea-drinking nations.
If we can grow the business, efficiency improves quite dramatically. Hence the reason for looking for new markets, you know, riding on the back of this free trade agreement that Australia and the UK are working on. We believe there's an opportunity there to branch out and reach a market with a similar taste profile. That will allow us to look seriously at expanding into new areas, planting more tea. And I think with scale comes considerable efficiency.
You likened earlier selling tea to the United Kingdom as coal to Newcastle. I mean, is there Are the Brits still big tea drinkers in that case?
I think a few of them, a few of the younger ones are switching to coffee, but there's still a substantial proportion of tea drinkers in the UK. I think it's a large market which we would be able to benefit from if we can penetrate it. The Australian market has been very interesting, and it's dominated by the major retailers, Coles and Woolworths. The challenge we typically have there is around pricing. We're seeing a lot of Australian manufacturers are challenged by the low cost of imports. But I think what we are doing now is sort of repositioning ourselves and trying to communicate to our loyal tea drinkers that, in fact, we produce a great tea here in Australia, and it's worth paying for.
That's Chairman of Narada Tea, John Russell, speaking with Charlie McKillop about the opportunities that a UK free trade agreement could bring. Frogs were already in big trouble, with many species seriously threatened, but the Black Summer bushfires put millions of them in the path of the blaze. Now researchers from the University of Newcastle are leading Australia's largest ever coordinated frog conservation effort in an effort to bank genetic material for future use. With the help of citizen scientists, the project tracks the locations and behaviours of frog colonies and uses a unique cryptopreservation method to collect and freeze frog sperm in the field. Anthony Scully reports.
In the Wattigan National Park south of Newcastle, conservation scientist Dr. Alex Callan is showing the latest volunteer recruits how to place recording devices in the bush near a creek where frogs are known to live.
This is our data logger here. We call it an audio moth. It's a very small piece of kit. Our previous acoustic data loggers were much bigger, and they're much more expensive. So because these are so small and so simple to use, we can spread them across a really wide area and learn a lot more about our frogs in national parks than we previously could.
High school teacher Laura Jones and her partner Chris Daughtry were highly motivated to take action after the 2019 Black Summer bushfires, where it's estimated 1 billion Australian animals perished.
Well, there's no other way to describe it, but it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
You can't... You know, once they're gone, they're gone. There's no replacing them. So I think a lot of people don't think about even the smallest of creatures like insects and that kind of stuff. A lot of people don't think that small to care about it. So to me, yeah, that's devastating.
What we're doing here today with Chris and Laura is deploying an acoustic data logger called an audio moth. And our citizen scientists can deploy those to key locations where we expect to find frogs calling. They can deploy them in the field for a period of 3 months, then they'll bring them back in and provide the data to our research team to interrogate.
Well, I know for me, I feel like, you know, we take lots from nature, so it's nice just to give back. So that's my main motivator. And I love national parks, and it feels like when we come to one now, we have a purpose to be here, a reason to be here.
And I am just a nature lover from a long, long time ago. My nickname is Nature Boy, and I've always been interested in this kind of stuff. And from my perspective, you know, these guys have been here for billions of years. I'd like them to be here for billions of years more.
In Bellingen, on the New South Wales mid-north coast, citizen scientists helped identify a colony of endangered frogs near where scientists recently perfected a method for extracting frog sperm in the field.
It's going to come out the other end. This is usually where I have an Eppendorf tube ready to catch it all.
Associate Professor of Conservation Biology at the University of Newcastle, Dr. John Clulow, says the genetic material will be sent to the frog sperm bank at Sydney's Taronga Zoo, where it can be held indefinitely.
So that if a population is lost, then we can go to our freezer and retrieve that material and help to regenerate living animals from that frozen material. And potentially, if we need to, reintroduce those animals back into the field to boost the populations that might have been impacted by events like the bushfires.
The people doing this conservation say frogs are very sensitive to changes in the environment.
Frogs are amongst the earliest life forms to come on land from the water, and most of the later, more advanced forms of vertebrates like reptiles and mammals and birds originally evolved out of the frogs that were... that in turn it evolved from fish. And so frogs have been around for tens and tens of millions of years, and the fact that we're seeing species disappear now at a rate that hasn't occurred in 100 million years in the environment, we know that we have a serious problem, and that's why we say that the frogs are canaries in the coal mine.
Back in the Wattigan National Park, Dr. Alex Callan thanks Laura Jones and Chris Daughtry for their help with this important scientific work.
So we'll see if it's here when you come back.
Perfect.
Great work. It's important to have this army of citizen scientists as our eyes and ears on the ground, because science is not confined to academic researchers alone. Everyone can do science, and we have such a conservation crisis that we need a large body of people who care about their land and are connected to their land to help us solve the problems of the biodiversity crisis.
Anthony Scully with that report.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
The Kimberley's Mirrawong-Gadjerong Corporation recently achieved a significant milestone. The Kununurra-based Indigenous organisation managed to place 100 local Aboriginal people in jobs. According to those it's helped, the so-called 100 Jobs Program succeeds because it's practical and, importantly, because it's local. National Regional Affairs reporter Eliza Borello caught up with one of the program's success stories, Wurundjeri radio presenter Ethan Cox, and asked him who he was before he joined the program.
I was very shy. I didn't know what I was going to do. Like, I had, like, long terms. I didn't really know what I was going to do after high school and after graduating. It was a very big, like, change to go from, like, going to school and now waking up on your own time to go to work. And it was completely different to me. And a bit free, because when you're at school, it's very restrictive with your teachers and parents. But when you're at work, you kind of just be treated like more of an adult. And I've been treated like an adult for the last 2 years. And it's been pretty good. They know that I'm going to be coming to work every day, instead of, like, you can't, you know, wag work. You just have to go through these processes if you want to have a sick day. But it's been very, very, like, amazing to be part of Wurundjeri Radio.
And can you tell me about your family life, who you live with and whether they have work?
I live with my mum and dad and my sister. My dad works, my mum is unemployed, but my sister goes to school, so with me working, it's just two people in the house are working. Dad pays the bills, I pay for the food, basically.
Has that meant a bit of a difference to how happy your family can be?
Yeah, like, I've always given them some money just in case if they have, like, they want to go to the shops and get some food, I can just give them money, and they've been pretty happy. And if I give them money, and also they can owe me back later.
Can you tell me what the 100 Jobs Program helped you with?
With the 100 Jobs Program, it's helped me get birth certificates, Medicaid numbers, even my L plates, even my logbook. They've helped me, and also my dad has helped me a few times. And it's took me like 6 weeks until I got this job, did my traineeship. But the 100 Jobs have really helped me. And also they've always checked up on me once every few months, just to check how you're going and is it good and you're doing good.
What would your suggestion be to another young person a little bit scared to enter the workforce now that you've taken that leap?
For young people, just take a risk. Just once in your life, just take a risk. If you find something that you want so bad and you just hold on to it, that's what I did for this radio station, is that I looked at that there was a traineeship coming up and I just looked at it and went, I want this traineeship. So I hold it, and now I have been working here for 2 years. So for anybody out there in the community who are just all those boys and girls who are just getting very nervous of getting into the workforce, just take a risk and do something that you usually don't do. It will change your life forever.
That's Wurundjeri radio broadcaster Ethan Cox speaking there with Eliza Borello. And finally tonight, school musicals are making a comeback after COVID, and students at Cobar High School in Western New South Wales spent 4 days last week writing, staging and performing their own original opera through a Sydney-based creative arts program called Opera Express. Their mission is to bring the performing arts to regional and remote schools. They've travelled from Rockhampton to Hobart, but the recent visit to Cobar marks their first trip to the outback. Dubbo reporter Olivia Ralph was there for the curtain call.
It's 4 hours until curtain up at Cobar High School.
So I want you to go, ah, as loud as you can without effort.
Students steel their nerves in the school gym, rehearsing lines, blocking scenes, fixing costumes. And a few laughs as they start to grasp the enormity of what they're about to do.
Yeah, I'm nervous. I have stage nerves never really get me, but when you're performing in front of people from the community or people that you know from school you're going to see every day, it's hard.
Yeah. Amara is one of 30 students at Cobar High School that spent the past 4 days creating an original opera.
Being a teenager in Cobar is kind of hard, kind of easy, has its ups and downs, but we can express who we are through either music or writing, even this opera. This, we can express ourselves. And Peter helped a lot creating the melody, and so did, and then Murray helped us with how we were going to say it, how the tone would be. It's just as we were seeing it come together, I was like, oh my god. Our song that was just a couple words is now an actual love song. And then
I'm Murray Dahm. I'm the creative director of Opera Express. We got a phone call from Laura Andrew, the music teacher at Cobar High School. She asked us if we'd be willing to come out to rural New South Wales to do an opera project. And I said, absolutely.
Opera Express is a travelling musical arts program for school-aged kids. Its founder, Murray Dahm, wanted to take his passion and experience in the opera industry and share it with the next generation, fostering an environment of creative risk-taking and, most importantly, fun.
That's gorgeous!
The four principles we work on are: there's no such thing as a bad idea and no such thing as a wrong answer. So that's our first principle. The second rule is that adults will be ignored. That means, of course, that we're not going to borrow other people's music. We're going to make new words and new music for the opera that the students have created. The third rule is that we don't do anything disrespectful. That if we're going to explore a challenging topic, we're going to find a way to do it respectfully. And the fourth rule is if you volunteer someone else, you volunteer yourself, which is essentially about them respecting one another. And this group has been really open-minded and supportive and really looking to care for one another as they've gone through this process.
I've always known the students to be very supportive and encouraging of each other, but watching them work together over the 4 days, they've just taken that to another level.
Laura Andrew has been the music teacher at Cobar High School for the past 3 years. She ventured to Cobar from Sydney as part of the Rural Scholarship for New Teachers.
I'm from Sydney. And when I did my internship as a music teacher at the Sydney School, I saw Opera Express. They were working with a group of Year 9 students, and it was kind of an eye-opener to see students getting engaged, creating their own music, and seeing how Murray and the musical director work with the students to create something completely new. So I had that in the back of my head, and with COVID last year, we started needing to think about alternative ways that we might present our school musical. And I thought it would be really nice for the students to take ownership of the music and the art that they create in Cobar.
My name is Tiana Jones. I'm in Year 9. I'm one of the main leads playing tonight, which is very exciting and the first time I've actually been, you know, in a play. I think my mum will be coming tonight, maybe my dad. I haven't told them that I'm one of the main leads because I just, you know, want to see their actual reaction, you know. It's going to be fun.
Showtime. It's a full house, and despite technical difficulties at the start, it's a success.
We've done projects from Rockhampton down to Hobart, and when you get further west, you wonder whether they're going to be as embracing of the idea of opera and give it a try. And I'm happy to say that these guys have been so open-minded and so welcoming from the very start.
Olivia Ralph with that story, and that is Australia Wide for this Tuesday night. Look forward to your company again tomorrow. I'm Alex Hyman. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.